You know, guns, they're dangerous.
Imagine like a hobby horse and a strimmer had a baby.
Because they're small, we don't consider them people.
How'd you bite me now?
Hello, and welcome to How Do You Like Me Now, the podcast where we go back and relive the golden years of kids' TV. I'm Will. With me, as always, is Liz. Howdy, Liz.
Howdy, partner. Is that what you wanted?
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what I was hoping for.
I think that's the first time I've let you choose my intro. Usually I say whatever the hell I want to say.
Well, I thought you
howdied me in there.
I did. I thought you'd just... Let's just see how it goes.
You're trying to get the vibe down.
I am a little bit. There is a vibe to this week's episode that I want to inject early doors.
Okay.
And that vibe is rootin' tootin'.
Good. Okay. Yeah. Well, I think you've nailed it so far.
Excellent. I like throwing in a partner as well. That was good. So, how have you been, Liz?
Let's just say not good.
Okay.
I don't know what listeners want to hear, really, because when you ask people, they're like, well, if someone asks you how you are, you just say fine and move on, don't you?
You do, yeah.
So I get ill a lot, don't I? Because I have like a chronic illness and it flares up a lot. Mm. And it does affect me in quite a big way. But I know that it is like, because I always have it, it's boring to keep talking about. But sometimes something happens with that illness that I feel I have to tell people, right? And one of those things this time was I've had a lot of what we call brain fog. So your brain literally feels foggy. It feels like you don't have access to all the same thoughts and thought processes as you usually do. It's like there's a cloud around in your brain and you just can't get to things. And one of the weirdest ways this presented itself was I kept singing a song and I knew that song, I knew the little tune, a bit of the tune, and then I knew there was a name said in that song and I couldn't remember the name.
Right.
And so my brain had inserted another name and I had to ask you about it because there's no way to like Google that because you can't Google like a tune. And the only words that I had were wrong. So what I was doing over and over and over in my brain was singing doo 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 Arthur Scargill. Now, if you don't know what that tune was, because I'm not much of a musician, so it wasn't a very good impression, but it's actually called Barbra Streisand.
Yes, it's by Duck Sauce.
Thank you for that. Barbra Streisand and Arthur Scargill, I don't think have anything in common other than the fact that my brain apparently thinks that they are phonetically similar.
Well, I think that they've got the same rhythm.
The same rhythm.
Yeah.
Arthur Scargill, of course, led the miners' strikes.
He did lead the miners' strikes.
I don't think there could be a more out-of-date reference for my brain to have chosen than a man that I barely remember what he was for, you know? So, yeah, if you want to know why there hasn't been a podcast for a while, I have just been sitting quietly in a room going, doo 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 Arthur Scargill, over and over to myself.
I think the thing is, though, regular listeners will, I think, look on this and go, okay, yep, that song's a bit, you know, that's a bit of like, you know, it was one hit wonder. It's a little bit past its day.
It's at least from my time, though.
Yeah,
Will.
Yeah. But to throw in Arthur Scargill in replacing Barbra Streisand, I think there were people listening going, yeah, that's peak Liz. That's
really that's on brand for me.
I think on brand for you.
This is like when I downloaded TikTok, right? Mm. And I immediately, because everybody talks about how accurate the algorithm is for TikTok, because it really is. It really is. And I have got to that now. But immediately when I went on there, I got recommended Fred Dibner. And I just, you know, this is an app that's primarily known for, like, the Gen Zs, as they call them, the young people dancing around mm-hmm. and all that sort of stuff. And I go on and it's like, you must want some Fred Dibner. And I felt, you know, I felt I was being targeted, but not in a way I could ever have predicted.
I mean, to be honest, if you'd said to me, oh, you know who's on TikTok? You should get on TikTok these days. You know who's on there? Fred Dibner. I would never have believed you.
Well, of course he's not. He's dead, isn't he?
Well, yeah. So who's putting Fred Dibner on TikTok?
Who is the person that went, oh, new social media platform. Need a bit of Dibner on there.
Ah, you know what we need on that.
That's what they'll be wanting.
Steeplejacking. That's what it is.
There'd be people sitting at home going, I don't know what they're talking about. I don't know who Arthur Scargill is. I don't know who Barbara Streisand is. I definitely don't know who Fred Dibner is.
I don't know what TikTok is. That's our sweet spot. People too young to remember Arthur Scargill, but too old to be invested in TikTok. That's our sweet spot,
that's,
Liz.
That's where we live. No, but I've heard that like the over 30s have taken over TikTok now.
Have they?
There's more over 30s. But I think we're all just on there going, oh, I'll have a little look. And see what's going on in the world. Maybe I'll pick up some stuff that makes me still relevant. But you know, our big one thing we have to thank TikTok for, right?
Mm-hmm.
Me and you have found a life hack that has revolutionised everything.
Oh my god!
It made TikTok worthwhile. I saw it, told you about it. This has changed our lives. Not an overstatement.
I really didn't think this podcast would hit a point where we were advocating life hacks. But
oh, yeah.
This genuinely has changed my life.
Life hacks as a concept, it's almost always something that you could do, but actually it seems like a lot of faff and you might as well just do it the way you always have done it.
Yeah.
Like people try and make them out of nothing. This one is a legitimate life hack. Right, I'm going to share it with the listeners now, even though it is hard to demonstrate in an audio format. Right, so, listeners.
Liz, can I ask that you do this in the has this ever happened to you format?
Listen up, guys. Has this ever happened to you? You're wearing your dressing gown. It's a long day working from home. Your dressing gown, you tie it up. Nice and tight, but yet the movement of the day causes it to flap open. The tie's still tight, but the arms, the jacket, the inners of, what do you call it?
The robe.
The robe has become...
It's parted.
It has parted. The robe has parted, right? What you've got to do, right, take off the belt, the fabric belt from the dressing gown. Right. Cross the robe parts over as normal, but feed the belt through the loops, right? And don't take it around the back. Leave both ends round the front. So you've got it through the belt loops, but it's around your front and you're about to tie it in the front too. So nothing goes round your back. It's all happening at the front. Will I need to put this on our social media for clarification? Yes. Guys, it works. Life-changing. I gave up wearing a dressing gown before I knew this hack.
Can I throw in a testimonial?
Yes.
I will. Before I stumbled upon the Liz TikTok method, I was forever having a problem where my robe was falling open, but my cord was still, like, cutting into my sides as I sat down. Now, thanks to Liz and TikTok, my robe stays closed and I stay comfortable.
Exactly. Thank you, sir. Another satisfied customer.
We have never met before. No, genuinely, I did not expect this to actually change. I don't do a dressing gown up the old-fashioned way anymore.
No.
I entirely do it the new TikTok way.
Yep.
And I'm much happier for it.
You're happier in your life for this.
I am. Well, the thing is, it works. Yeah, the robe doesn't come apart and it doesn't cut into my sides. It's great. The only downside, and there's only one slight downside, is when it's a faff to get out of.
It takes an extra second when you're undoing it.
Yeah. Which is more of a faff than before. And also, when you do undo it, you end up with one very long piece of cord.
Yes, I understand. There's drawbacks to any life hack.
Oh, absolutely. But, I mean, the thing is, the benefits of this far outweigh...
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
So, there we are. A brief life hack for anyone with a dressing gown.
Anyone who's a sofa dweller, like us. Anyone who doesn't leave the house much.
So, Liz, enough of these life hacks, though. Let's move on to the real reason we're here to talk about Brave Star.
I don't think it'll come as any surprise to people to know this was your choice.
It was my choice. It was a listener suggestion from a long time ago, and I've had it in my back pocket, and I'm so glad we did it for multiple reasons.
Yeah?
Yep, multiple reasons. Because one, this is made by Filmation, so it's the same studio that did He-Man, that did She-Ra, that did the original Ghostbusters cartoon, and there's all kinds of craziness to talk about with Filmation, which we'll get onto in time.
Okay.
Two, it's a Western, and I know you hate Westerns.
I do, but it is a space Western.
It is a space Western. And three, it has literally hundreds of characters.
Ah, yes. We will be getting onto that.
So, let's get into it then.
First thing to say is it's one of those where they do a lot of the exposition in the titles. The theme tune has a lot to tell you.
Yep.
And so I was immediately overwhelmed.
Yeah, there's a lot to take in. Even reading about it, even reading it like from a sheet or from a website, it's still confusing.
Because when we actually watched it, I felt like it didn't really need to be a space Western. It could just be like set in an apocalyptic future where there's like Western elements. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, completely.
Whereas there's all this stuff about them being on, I believe, either a planet or a ship called New Texas.
It's a planet.
A planet called New Texas.
Yes.
I hope that that future never comes to pass. I think one Texas, enough. One and done, I would say.
Well, it's about 6,000 light years from Earth, New Texas.
Okay.
This takes place in the far future.
Far future.
Where, despite, you know, millennia having passed and us being thousands of light years across the galaxy, we've still got majority Western elements preserved.
Listen, I accept that because you know that I'm a Trekkie. I watch Star Trek and I love one where they turn up, they are nowhere near Earth, and yet, for some reason, they're just on a planet of, you know, Chicago-style mobsters.
Mm.
I love it. I'm into that. I can get into that. But I think I'm taking in a different spirit than most people. I love it precisely because it's absurd.
Yeah.
That's why I enjoy it.
Yeah. I mean, and the thing is that this makes a decent hash at, like, being fairly serious. It compared to some of the other things we've watched where it's like, well, yeah, this is daft because it's a cartoon. This is like, no. Take this seriously.
That's where it falls down for me.
I can take that.
I in no way wanted to take this seriously. So we meet Marshall Bravestar.
We do.
Our main character. And he definitely takes himself seriously. And he is both... Because obviously there's a trope of like cowboys and... I won't call them Indians because it's offensive now, but Native Americans. There's a trope of those like being the, you know, the goodies and the baddies.
Mm-hmm.
He seems to be both.
Both goody and baddie.
Both a cowboy and a Native American.
Yes, I think he is. I think he's intended to... I think his backstory is he is from Earth originally.
Right.
Don't know quite why, but is on New Texas with as part of these humans on New Texas.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's been... There's a shaman. And I don't... The shaman
kind
of...
They say shaman, don't they?
Shaman. The shaman is kind of like a father figure, kind of looking after him, but it's not sure if the two are...
Actually related.
Related. I think the implication is that the shaman has kind of adopted Bravestar and raised him to be protector of peace. That's like his champion of justice and protector of peace. That's his kind of raison d'etre.
Okay, fine. So all of that I can get on board with because, you know, very often the main character is a bit of a dud. They're a square. They're not the interesting one.
Yeah.
So his best friend is a horse.
Yes, his best friend is... I'll correct you on that. His best friend is an equestroid.
Okay, so a standing up horse.
Yes, a robotic horse. Well, I guess an android horse.
If people haven't seen this, but they are familiar with furry porn, he's very much drawn in that style.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'll go on board with that.
Can I just clarify? Because I've been accused of being a furry once before, and I think people know me well enough that they know I'll admit to what sort of pervert I am. And it's not that kind of pervert. I don't like furry stuff. But somehow, I went my whole life without really knowing furries were a thing. And then a couple of years back, they just seemed to, I don't know, they had their heyday. Just took off, didn't it?
It became big. It was.
Yeah, everyone was getting into it. Went mainstream.
Yeah, that's it. That's what happened.
And yeah, if you've seen any kind of like drawing of that, which they crop up on Twitter. Twitter's the like black sheep of the social media, just lets anything in.
Yeah, that's it.
He very much seems to be drawn in that style.
Yes. Yeah.
I have multitudes of problems with this character.
Okay. Start me off on some of them.
Well, I think I just have, Will. Overly sexual. Did you get that?
Well, I mean, he does go any opportunity he can to whip out his massive gun.
He does have a big gun, and we'll get onto that. What's his name, first of all?
His name is 3030.
Now, what is that?
I don't know. His name is 30/30. That's right, how it's...
I will tell you now,
yep.
Okay? I spoke about this problem in some other episode of a cartoon that you made me watch that I never would have had any interest in, but I was forced to see, which is that every animator working in the 80s has been screwed up by George Lucas, right? So because R2-D2 and C-3PO have, like, little number names, and because this horse is part android, they've gone, oh, I've got to give it a technological name, which also sounds kind of old westerny. So they've called him 3030.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I feel like I don't have so much of a problem with the name, because I think, what's the alternative? You give him a regular horse name?
Oh, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right not to have a problem with the name, because there is an alternative, Proffered, by Marshall Bravestar himself. And let's just talk about their relationship.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Because I don't blame Marshall Bravestar for being a bit confused. Because as we see in the other episode, he sometimes rides his friend. And yeah, that has to be a confusing relationship. But he calls him, in this episode, he calls him Big Pard.
Yes.
Which is supposed to be short for big partner.
Yes.
But definitely sounds like big hard. And I absolutely swear to you, that's because he was got a bit confused one day, called him big hard, and then had to play it off like, oh, no, big hard, no, this is my big pard, big partner. That's what I meant, mate. That's what I meant, don't worry. Oh, God. Big hard. As if I call you that, we don't have that kind of relationship, do we?
And of course, with the circle back of like, yeah, no, you don't. Just...
I mean, we obviously we could. No, we couldn't. But like, you know, if you, I mean, if you were, but no, I'm not. But
I mean, we have to work together. It'd be weird. I mean, that's not the only reason, but you know, but that's a major reason. Oh my God,
I'm not joking to you. I have never heard of this before. You made me watch it. Mm-hmm. But if I searched for about 5 seconds online, I reckon I could find a community of people who were very confused by the character of 3030.
I think that's fair. I think the thing is, what they've tried to do in the relationship between the two is go for like a, you know, Lone Ranger, Tonto, you know, like Gary Cooper, like John Wayne and his psychic. You know, they've tried to go for that kind of like relationship where it's, you know, it's kind of their partners, but they're also kind of brothers, and they're very close, but they rely on each other and they can anticipate each other's moves. But it does end up being deeply, I don't know what, erotic, because I don't know what the term is for a relationship between a man and a horse android.
I don't know either, but it's a relationship that's not, you know, not unexpected to me, because as a kid, I wasn't into pony riding, but coming from a sort of rural area, a lot of girls were. And a lot of girls' first love, I think, is their horse or pony.
Really?
And I think that is because, you know, they tend to have, like, you know, 4-foot dongs. Like, it just gets them confused. I'm not saying anything goes on, but in their mind, they're a little bit screwed up. And I'm just saying, in Marshall Bravestar, in his mind, he's a little bit confused by this, because he's like, oh, he's my friend, but sometimes I ride him.
And he's got a 4-foot dong and that massive cannon.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, we should talk about his massive cannon.
Yes, he's got a huge space blunderbuss he calls Sarah Jane.
Now, I was very confused about this for almost the entire episode, because they kept talking about this character of Sarah,
yep,
and I never saw her. And, you know, I always interested to see if there is going to be a woman, because very often there isn't. But, yeah, the first female character we get introduced to, it's just a gun with a girl's name.
Yes. Yeah, Sarah Jane. And this gives us kind of the setup of there, too. So Marshall Bravestar he's a bit more cautious. He thinks out his plans. You know, he's taking stock of things. 30-30 wants to shoot first and ask questions later.
He's the true American.
He's the true American horse android.
Yes.
So he whips out his big cannon and shoots like a canyon wall. And Bravestar comes back with a great line, which is out of the canon of Westerns of, you shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, shouldn't have, that's a Western word. If anyone out there is after a piece of solid dialogue from Western, it's shouldn't have.
Yeah, if you can abbreviate like 3 or 4 words, yep, then you're doing it right.
Mm.
I also enjoyed, well, I'll be dag-nammed.
Yes, great. No idea what it means, dag-nammed. No
idea.
Well,
you can't say damned. Because
no, you can't.
You can't say that in a kid's show in America. And cowboys, I think, were very respectful. That's what they would have said around a lady. If there was one. It wasn't a gun.
Deeply respectful, unless they're shooting people.
Yes. Well, it's that American kind of morality, isn't it?
Mm.
Like, you're allowed to shoot somebody if you don't like the look of them, but don't say a very minor cuss.
Yes, as long as you tip your hat to a lady at the end, you're fine.
Yes, exactly.
That's it. That's the worst crime, is bad manners towards the women folk.
I'm being rude about female characters, but there is one. I don't know her name.
I can tell you her name.
Please do.
She is...
The episode didn't.
No, she is Judge J.B. McBride.
Okay. I quite like that.
She is the, as far as I can tell, the only female character in Bravestar.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not surprised. Very rarely do we find an 80s cartoon that does more than one.
She is the town, this frontier town they're in,
yeah,
she's the only judge. She's also kind of like a marshal in her own right a bit.
Honestly, when she turned up, she looked awesome.
Yeah?
No?
Well, she looks good. She looks cool. But there's a thing with the animation style where it looks like she's permanently looking off to the left. She's looking out the left side of her eyes the whole time. Like, Marshall Bravestar's in front of her and she's looking, like, over there. It's like...
She's looking at 3030's dong.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's it.
Why would she even be looking at Marshall Bravestar when 3030's around? I'm telling you, that's what she's looking at as caught her eye.
But yeah, she is the only recurring woman.
Another redhead?
Yeah, another redhead. Another.
You know I like to see a redhead in these.
You do, but she does look cool. She's got a good...
Freaking awesome when she turns up.
Yep.
She looks like she could kick some ass. Unfortunately, she doesn't. She just disappears. Not really making the most of her, but, yeah, you know. I appreciate we only watched 2 episodes, so maybe she gets her moment. So we know that 3030 is an equestroid, which I'm not happy with as a name.
You didn't like that?
No, I didn't like it. Just too on the nose.
Too on the nose?
Yeah.
See, I quite like equestroid, but I knew the second I sort of saw it written down, I was like, Liz is not going to like that.
No. Anyway, we go off to the Hall of the Equestroids.
Yes, we do. So Bravestar and 3030 are having a bit of a tiff, because Bravestar thinks that 3030 shouldn't use guns as his first resort. 3030 feels otherwise. And as Bravestar says to Judge J.B. McBride, just because we disagree about his gun doesn't mean we ain't friends.
Yeah. I have to be honest, I know this is made for children.
Mm-hmm.
There were quite a few times where I wasn't sure if they were writing it at a child's level or it was just appalling writing. Because I think Marshall goes off to... Bravestar goes off to his shaman mate.
Yes.
Right? And this guy, he's, you know... supposed to be like all like wise, and you know, he's got the very like reverential low voice, whatever. And he's literally says to him, "You're 30-30. He may not feel you're his friend anymore." Like, what in the kind of, you know, 9-year-olds falling out over a pencil case bullshit is this?
It is amazing. So, yeah, they've had this. Bear in mind, this is the first episode as well. This is the first time we're introduced to these characters.
Yeah, conflict early on. I do like it better than when they just set up all of the stuff that was in the titles.
Yes, that's the thing. There is no origin story here. It's just, boom, we're
straight
in,
into it.
Straight into it, straight away.
So, having said that, we do get a sort of flashback to how 30-30 and Bravestar met. So it is doing some of that, like, origin stuff, but doing it in a slightly better way than we have seen.
Yeah, this is where it gets confusing, because then 30-30, the shaman announces, has gone back to a previous time. He's abandoned him. So he's gone back in time to the Hall of the Equestroids.
Because all of the Equestroids are gone apart from 30-30?
Yeah, possibly. It's not clear. It's never made clear. It's okay. Never made clear. No idea. Couldn't tell you. Couldn't tell you even if I wanted to. But he's gone back
the
in time.
The shaman says he's gone back to where he was wanted. So 30-30 has this ability to travel through time and space, possibly. But yeah, the reason that he's done that is because he doesn't feel wanted. Again, there's more going on between these two than a simple disagreement about gun control. Back to where he was wanted? Like, I mean, who's this stroppy?
Hey, there was a time when you wanted my gun. When you wanted my gun so bad, you just couldn't think about anything else. But now, suddenly, it's been a couple of years, and my gun just isn't doing it for you anymore. But yeah, so they've gone back to the scene of their first battle, which is the Hall of the Equestroids.
Well, the first battle is also, you know, like, it was when they became friends.
Yes.
So it's a confusing thing to say they've gone back to their first battle. Also, can I just say, right, before we get past it, I said that Bravestar sometimes rides
30-30.
Obviously in the manner of a horse. Because 30-30 walks on his back legs like a person most of the time. A la furry porn star. But Bravestar sometimes rides on a back horse style.
It sounds so much dirtier when you say horse style.
It does, doesn't it?
It does. A la furry style, a la horse style.
But when Bravestar isn't riding his friend, he has a kind of chopper pogo stick.
I'm so glad you brought this up. It's the most ridiculous thing in the world.
I had to bring this up because I want you to explain it to me. What is that? Does it have a name?
No.
How would you describe it?
I would describe it as a giant strimmer.
A strimmer.
It is like he's
like my dad has for doing the garden.
He's riding a giant strimmer. So it's kind of like,
it's fluorescent though, it glows.
Yeah, it does. And it's got a huge blade on it, and it hovers off the ground, and he's going along the thing. It's got like a giant single rotor blade in the base of it, like a strimmer has. It's like a flymo. It's like a giant stripped down flymo, but with a pole.
I think chopper pogo stick was a better description than flymo.
Yeah. Imagine like a hobby horse and a strimmer had a baby. That's kind of what he's riding, right? Because it's not like he, you know, he's got,
no wonder he's desperate to get 30-30 back.
The thing is, there are other like robotic horse type things in this world. There's turbo mules in the other episode, so other like beasts of burden are there. He just doesn't want to ride any other beast, because imagine how awkward that would be.
Oh,
he rocks up at 30-30, like, oh, I've come to get you back, and he sees he's there with another horse, and he's like, well, you moved on pretty damn quick.
Have you been riding a turbo mule?
I thought you were better than that, Bravestar.
I thought I was your turbo mule.
Well, that's the last time you'll get any of my cannon. Because when he's going along that strimmer, he says, blasted horse, wait till I get my hands on him. And the strimmer looks like it's going about 2 miles an hour. Like, it feels like he could be walking quicker.
Yeah.
And speaking of, right, we haven't talked about it yet. The intro makes it very clear.
Oh, we haven't even talked about his powers.
We haven't talked about his powers.
His powers.
Right. Marshall Bravestar has 4 magic powers.
I can't believe we've left it this long.
Right, he has the eyes of the hawk, which gives him, like, super vision, so he can see really far, and he can...
So they're all animals.
Yeah.
And also something that goes with animals. And can I just say, eyes of a hawk, perfect sense. It's a, you know, it's an expression, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, a hawk eye, whatever. We get that.
Yep.
That gives him the ability to see, I don't know,
see really far
and wide,
and
whatever.
Also, it can allow him to have, like, an overhead view of the area. So he can actually look down on an area.
Now, how does that work? Does he start flying, or does his eyes go up on stalks?
It's the spirit of the hawk.
It's just spirit. It just comes into his brain.
Yep, comes into his brain.
Fine. Okay, so I'm good with that one. Let's go through the others.
The strength of a bear.
Well, again, very useful. You'd want strength, wouldn't you?
Oh, of course.
What's stronger than a bear? I don't know, but maybe something. But nothing more appropriate to a Native American.
Nothing in the Western genre
is stronger
than a bear. That's it.
Absolutely. Right? Got it.
Has the speed of the puma.
Speed. Again, speed, very useful.
Yep.
Puma, fast.
I presume a puma's
pretty
fast.
Puma's a jaguar, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of like a jaguar.
It's a big cat.
It's a big cat. So I think, okay, yeah, fair enough, I take that on board. It's like the closest thing I think you can get to a cheetah in the Western oeuvre.
Okay. So, he can see far... He can be strong, go fast. What else would you need?
Well, you clearly, if you have all of those gifts, need to be able to hear if someone was sneaking up on you.
Okay.
So you get the...
What hears really well? A bat?
Well, I mean, bats use echolocation, so they can sense what's around them. But, I mean, you know, I can't think of any animals that are noted for hearing really well. Maybe an elephant. They've got giant ears.
Well, what? But that isn't Western. So what does his hearing...
He has the ears of a wolf.
Ears of a wolf.
Ears of a wolf.
Okay, well, I guess a wolf can sort of hear. Based on ears of a wolf, can I just say we're really lucky they didn't go to five? If those writers had been pushed to come up with a fifth animal power, I dread to think.
Gills of the fish.
Yes.
Leap of the salmon. That would be it. That would be able to jump.
Oh, jump really,
really
high, like a salmon.
Like a salmon. That'd be it. I mean, you'd have to do it like a salmon, like arms to the side and flap his legs like mad.
I'd like if they just upped the campness and there was like, you know, dress like a butterfly and one where he could just like look really good. I'd just, just make his outfit really flamboyant.
Steadfastness of the redwood. And he just becomes a tree.
Oh, yeah, like a camouflage one.
Yeah, that would have been good. That would have been really good.
The animal's really obscure, like, a moth.
Yeah. Or it's just a made-up animal. I've never seen one of them. Exactly.
Exactly.
That's it. But this is the thing. If he has this speed of the puma, which he can use at will, why is he riding a strummer?
I don't know. Maybe it takes a lot out of him. But I can only think... that they put that object in there to be as conspicuous as possible so that we would go, oh, that's because he can't ride his mate, you know? Because it sticks out like a sore thumb. Like you say, most other things in this world, although they're like technologically advanced, they're based on stuff from Westerns. So you can see where their origin is. The origin of that is nowhere to be found, and it glows, and it's impractical. So it's like they made it as conspicuous as possible, so we would all go, oh, he's not riding his friend, the horse.
Well, of course he needs to get the horse back. Look at the alternative.
Get the horse back? Look at the state of that.
Oh, my God. So he gets to the Hall of the Equestroids.
And he's been told by the shaman he won't remember. Because, of course, he's gone back in time. So, you know how time travel is.
Yep. Oh, tell me about it. Don't I know how time travel works on New Texas?
And Marshall Bravestar encounters a horse statue.
Yes.
Which, on contact with him, crumbles to reveal a horse inside...
Yes.
Gives him some information, and then when he leaves again, the crumbles reform around the horse.
Yes.
Quite an impractical receptionist.
Very, very impractical. I mean, I feel bad for the horse. If the statue just came to life, I would have accepted that. Don't need to have it crumble and it be a horse inside.
No.
No. Just a statue that talks. Fine, I'll go on board with that. That's not the most outlandish thing you're presenting to me. That's less ridiculous than the statue crumbling and reforming around this horse every time someone pops in to make a delivery to the Hall of the Equestroids. Yeah, you know, oh, I've got something for the ruins next door. Oh, mate, last time. Look, I can't take these parcels anymore, okay? I have to crumble when you come here. I have to reform. I have to crumble when they come back again.
I am the ruins. He's been told also, hasn't he, Marshall Bravestar, if you win...
Mm-hmm.
So basically, he's told you've got to fight your friend, and you fought him before and gained his trust and friendship. If you win, you'll go back to the future. If you lose, I've just put ... So I assume it was bad.
Yeah, I think there's consequences, but they're never spoken about.
Yes. It was sort of like, oh, if you lose,
there'll be trouble. I think that's basically what it boiled down to, but they couldn't come up with any consequences. It's like, well, of course he's not going to lose, so what are the consequences matter? Let's not bother putting him in.
Yeah, just scratch that part out, don't need that.
I'll save us some runtime there. We'll just cut 5 seconds there. That's great. Now we're running to time.
They also make a big point of saying that 30-30 won't leave for empty friendships. There's a real heavy burden placed on Marshall Bravestar that this friendship with his horse mate must be real. He won't just leave the Hall of Equestroids for empty friendships.
Well, this is it. I mean, to be honest,
very discerning friend.
He is. I mean, he says when he arrives and tries to apologise, 30-30 says apologies mean nothing in the Hall of the Equestroids, which
very much the rule in our house.
What a ridiculous. I start inviting listener correspondents to the Hall of the Equestrians.
Of the Equestrians. You said it's a ridiculous rule, then you realise I don't accept apologies either.
That's true. Apologies do mean nothing in this Hall of the Equestrians.
Oh, I hate apologies.
Well, you and 30-30 alike. So they have this fight because they fight and... It's a lot of back and forth. So this is where we get Strength of the Bear and he's like punching him through walls.
Just be honest, Will. Strength of the Bear is all we get.
Yeah, that's true. Well,
he's leaning real heavy on the Strength of the Bear. It's clear that Ears of the Wolf are a very, very distant fourth place because you occasionally get the puma, but you get a lot of the bear.
Once
in a while, they throw in the hawk, just once per episode, just to make sure you know that that is useful. Can't think of anything for the wolf. Like, Ears of the Wolf. They're fluffy, nice to pet. What?
Begs the question, why put it in? Rule of three.
Have three. Yeah. That's totally normal to have three. Nobody was asking for four. You've pushed it to the fourth one.
Oh, amazing. So, they have this big fight. The hall starts collapsing around them because they're breaking into so many walls with Strength of the Bear and everything else. And at one point, Bravestar gets his hat knocked off. I feel he loses all authority without the hat. Like any good, sheriff.
He is a cowboy.
Yes, he is.
Is essential to the look.
Yeah.
A cowboy without a hat? Absurd.
Yeah. Because he's wearing, like, sort of, you know, the tan and blue coat suit he's got. And he has this white Stetson. And the second he loses that Stetson, all authority gone.
I like his look. I'll be honest. Sometimes I don't praise anything in these shows because I don't enjoy them on the whole. But the look of him, great. I think it's excellent character design, but he does need the hat.
Yeah, 100%.
Without it, he looks kind of just like an extra from Space 1999.
He does! Yes, that is a very good and accurate reference. And
which
again,
a lot of people won't get.
A lot of people won't get because it's from a time before.
Yes. I say it even though I know it's not a big enough audience for that. My Space 1999 jokes they will not find their home.
There'll be someone out there listening going, that is a quality Space 1999
there
joke.
There won't. They'll be in an old people's home. They don't know what a podcast is, Will.
There will be, I guarantee, a third person in the world who has seen both Space 1999 and Bravestar recently enough to be able to go, yep, got it. That
got it.
Right there. That is incisive commentary. So, with the Hall of the Equestroids collapsing, Bravestar takes matters into his own hands and uppercuts this horse, and he...
He uppercuts this horse. Sometimes you just gotta uppercut a horse.
I feel like that's like the most John Wayne thing he does. Go, well, he's not listening. I'm gonna have to knock out this horse. That's just what I'm gonna do. So he uppercuts him, knocks him out cold, carries him out of the hall, and then 30-30 kind of comes to and remembers. So then they return back to their own time, and then we get a stalwart of Filmation, right?
Yeah.
Filmation, the studio, their big thing in all their cartoons in the 80s, they all had a moral at the end of it.
Oh, how I loathe the moral.
Yes.
Always, on everything, but especially this time.
Because basically it boils down to what they've said 8 times in the episodes already, which is... fighting is not the way to solve things. You have to agree to disagree.
The worst kind of moral is one that your characters didn't even learn in that episode. They started with the moral. Marshall Bravestar said that at the beginning. He said, sometimes we just have to agree to disagree. And I don't feel like... I don't feel like 3030 wasn't on board with that. He just didn't feel heard in the relationship, right? So they go through all of this, and the way that their characters are taught that lesson is it like one of them goes on a sulk and the other one has to knock him out and drag him back. And then they go, so you know that conversation we were having right at the beginning? Yeah, we're still good on that? Yeah, exactly the same. Everybody feels exactly the same as they always did. Yes.
We're still having exactly the same argument.
Let's make sure to tell the audience the exact same thing as we did at the beginning. Agree to disagree.
Credits. That's...
No, they actually say, right on.
Right on.
Right on.
There we go. Oh, amazing. So that was the first episode, which is... That's the first episode, which I feel sets us up well. Now, this is one series of Bravestar only, 65 episodes.
I was going to ask you about that. So there's only one series?
Only one series.
But a lot of episodes.
There was a film made as well.
Oh, wow.
Animated film. The series reportedly cost $20 million to make.
How?
I do not know.
Somebody drew it. How do they spend that much money?
Well, this is the thing. Filmation as well as a
studio. How do they spend that much money?
I don't know.
Well,
I do not know.
There's 65 episodes.
Yep.
And people drew it.
Yep.
So it's just like pens.
Yep, pens, ink, voiceover costs. And it was the 80s, so I presume cocaine. I think that's... But it apparently cost $20 million to make the series. Now, the origins of it... Again, no surprise to you, this started as a line of toys, and then they made the series to go around it.
Do you know what? You say it's no surprise. I am always surprised that these things didn't, like, I can understand when they made it, like, if they were going, this will look good for toys, and that's why we're choosing it. Mm-hmm. But I am always amazed when it's like, make a toy, and then we can just, like... create a show out of these toys we've got knocking about, like, because we haven't spoken about how many characters there are in that first episode. It was hard to see who, like, there might have been an antagonist, because there's one scene where which is when they shoot the guns, when it all kicks off, where they have coyotes. Is that how you say that word?
No.
Coyotes.
Coyotes are fish wolves.
Oh, I see what you've done. You've Thanks. Mocked me. coyotes.
Yes.
And I thought, oh, they're the antagonists. But they don't crop up in the second episode. The second episode, we have a different antagonist, and it's bad. Not very good. Don't like it. Not a fan. There's also Bravestar. Totally get him. In toy version, cartoon version, I can see how that's the hero you would want. He's got his own look, authority, whatever. Stetson, we love it. Mm-hmm. I've told you my problems with 3030, but he's very much got a look.
Yep.
I'm not on board with it, and sometimes I'm too on board with it, but he's got it. There's also these weird things. Small, I'm going to describe them and see if you've got a name for them. Small, very strange voices, not human, sort of look like they're wearing fur, strange faces.
Yes.
Have you got a name for me?
I do not have a name for you. They do have a name. They are the native people of the planet.
Right. They so, sorry. I hadn't appreciated that.
Yeah.
Just so we're clear.
Mm-hmm.
Our lead, I've referred to him as a Native American, but he is in fact a colonizer.
Yes.
Because he's gone to another world
yep.
and taken over there.
Yes. Everyone here, with the possible exception of the equestroids, aside from the little furry blokes who we see mining Carrion, which is this...
Have we enslaved them?
Well, I don't know.
I'm not feeling good about this.
Not feeling good about it?
I'm not feeling good about this part of the lore.
No, so basically they are the people who live on this planet of New Texas.
Much like the Oompa Loompas, because they're small, we don't consider them people.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. That's a decent analogy to make. But anyway, one of them is called
Kevin
Deputy Fuzz.
No, it's worse. It's worse than what I said.
Deputy Fuzz is the only one.
Oh, that's awful, Will. That's definitely not his real name. He's probably in his native language got some beautiful name, which means, you know, jewel of the furry people, and they've called him Deputy Fuzz. That is so offensive.
It is like the nickname you would give to the cat who lives at the station.
Yes.
Oh, this here is Deputy Fuzz. We keep him around. He's fun. Look at him. He's cute. No, Deputy Fuzz, he is one of the indigenous race of this planet who has joined Marshall Bravestar. So he fights crime with Marshall Bravestar.
And who does the crime?
Well, in the opening, the main antagonist is not in either of the episodes we watched. Brilliant. Other than in the titles.
And great choices, Will.
Yep, thank you. His name is Tex Hex, right? You see him at the start, he's got purplish skin and he's got the sort of prospector mustache.
Is he a human?
He is not.
Is he an equestroid?
No.
Is he a fuzzy person?
I'll tell you what he is, right?
Yeah.
He's none of those. I can't tell you what he is. What I can tell you is where he came from.
Okay.
Ghostbusters.
What?
The studio director...
Is he out the little box?
No.
It's one of the ectoplasm. They let him out.
The studio director saw this character they were working on for Ghostbusters, one of the ghosts, and thought, I really like that character. He's great. I'm going to steal him from Ghostbusters, where he's just going to be a ghost, and make him the antagonist in Bravestar.
That's wild.
It's crazy, right? So he's like one of the first characters they put into this cartoon thing for these toys, is this antagonist, Tex Hex. So, yeah, he's the main antagonist, but there are masses of different bandits. They come and go all the time. In this second episode, we do meet one of them who is another of the indigenous population, who is called Scuzz. And he's riding around a little car and smoking a cigar. He's the only one who's turned to crime in the same way that Fuzz is the only one who's turned to law enforcement. All the others are mining.
They're just...
miners.
I was going to say they're just chilling. They're not chilling. They're mining.
They're
which
mining.
Is so much worse.
They're mining Carrion, which is this mineral, which the planet is rich with. Like this is the gold rush. They're mining Carrion rather than gold.
Okay, Will. A lot to unpack there.
Yes. So there we are. So Tex Hex is our main antagonist. He is not in this episode. Our antagonist in this is...
Two-Face.
Yes.
Which is a bird with two heads.
Yeah.
I wasn't on board with Two-Face.
No. Awful. Awful antagonist.
Because he's not scary.
Nope.
And he's not funny.
Nope.
And he's not... Well, he's not really anything, is he?
He's not. What he is one live bird head and one robotic bird head on a robotic body.
But he just seems... He seems like a bottom feeder. He doesn't seem like a top-tier baddie. or yeah. like he could ever reach the top. He seems like somebody you could swipe out of the way and just literally, yeah, who cares?
Yeah, no, I'm with you 100% on this. He's not a good baddie. But this one, this episode is to walk a mile. So from the episode title, I think you can already tell what the moral's going to be.
You can, can't you? You can yeah. already tell that to walk a mile, everybody knows the end is, you know, in someone else's shoes, you know, that everybody knows what the proverb is that has inspired this episode. If you didn't, then we start, literally the first lines of Marshall Bravestar talking to his shaman mate, saying, next time I'm here, I'll bring you new moccasins. Which I don't really like, Will.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, it does feel like an unnecessary, like, what can we put in here in place in this saying that makes it seem more like a Western?
How can we make a saying about walking a mile in somebody's shoes seem more appropriate to a shaman who's a Native American type? Oh, what are they like? Moccasins. And it's like, oh yeah, get moccasins in there early. Like, oh, that's exactly what they'd say. There's been no research. They don't, like, they're not, I don't think they're based on a specific tribe or anything.
No.
So it's very sort of like,
it's just a series of generic tropes.
If, yes, it's very generic tropes. Like, I mean, if you've vaguely ever seen a Western with some, like, Native Americans represented in it, you could do the writing just as well.
It does feel like there's been a bit of a conversation where someone's gone to the head writer, do you think there's a chance we could say moccasins too many times in the opening of this episode?
Mm.
And they've gone, no, throw it in more.
They've said, oh, moccasins, some people won't know that word straight away. Say it a few times so they really get what it is. Moccasins. Mm. You know moccasins.
Yeah.
It's what they call shoes. Keep saying moccasins.
Oh, and they do. So we get a brief flashback of young Marshall Bravestar wearing the shaman's moccasins, saying, oh, you told me to understand someone, I have to walk a mile in their moccasins.
Which, but I don't, I've been walking around in yours for ages and I don't feel any different. I, oh, no, young brave star, you have misunderstood the message.
Come see me again in 20 years, we'll talk
I've
then.
Literally written down eek. Yes. Because I felt uncomfortable with the way that this was depicted.
Oh my god. But after this horrendous heavy-handed moccasin discussion,
yes,
we're introduced to a couple of prospectors.
Now, I thought these two prospectors, I don't know what you thought, that they were just like mates, about the same age,
mm-hmm.
but one was small. They're actually father and son.
Yes, they are.
Usually in a cartoon, like, the father and son will look like a mini version of the other. They look nothing alike.
Yeah, I think it's because it's a tough Western frontier, so your son can't be like seven.
That kid's really aged.
Yeah, he's got to be like an older teenager at least, you know, because it's tough out there on the space range.
I'm sure it is. Mm. So this character you were talking about, Scuzz.
Yes.
He's giving them a hard time.
He is, along with another character whose name I don't have written down.
Nobody cares.
Yep.
So our two prospectors, who are humans, by mm-hmm. the way, who look nothing alike but a father and son, get done over by Scuzz and somebody else.
Yep.
Bravestar comes along to sort it all out.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very much, you know, just say the word and I'll lock these guys up and throw away the key.
Which is not surely how marshals operate.
Absolutely was.
Really? Hello?
In the Wild West? Come on. Come on, Will.
You think, really, they're like, you've got to say press charges before I lock these guys up. Otherwise, I've caught them doing you bad, but I've got to let them go otherwise.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, I do sort of think it was like that. I think it was kind of like, you could make it up. You can do whatever you liked.
Well, it is frontier justice.
Do you want these guys locked up forever, you know, and throw away the key? Yeah, yeah, I do, actually. Fine, good. Do you want them let out? Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
Do you want them dead? Because I can shoot them right now.
I'll just shoot them, you know, my questions asked.
My horse mate is pretty trigger happy.
Yes. Anyway, the father doesn't want it. He says, no, let them go. It's all a misunderstanding, you know, let's just move on. Everybody calm down. We've all had some fun. he's a bit shifty. He doesn't want to say his name, doesn't want to give his name. But somebody says, aren't you Lucas Conway? Weren't you, you know, this marshal, like, in the past? And he's like, I'm just Lucas Conway. Just leave it. And doesn't want, you know, to press charges, doesn't want any more spoken about. And you sort of, you can see that they're all judging him for that.
Yeah. So, yes. Yeah, so the son and Lucas Conway and his son, they've now wandered off to go and do their prospecting, whatever. And Bravestar fills us in that, oh, yeah, Lucas Conway, he was the marshal on Rigel 7 and he turned in his badge and no one knows why.
Let's just tell the listener the reveals here because it's going to get too confusing otherwise. And really, nobody's sitting there, you know, on tenterhooks waiting to know.
Absolutely.
So, Lucas Conway, this father character, he's a former marshal and he's trying to keep it quiet. That much is evident. We find out that this two-headed bird character, oh, Lucas Conway, that's the guy who put me inside. So, he's got beef with him now.
Yep.
Lucas Conway also reveals to, I think, Bravestar, not his son.
Yes.
That the reason that he gave up his badge, which was that he was trigger happy again, shooting around. And I think we see footage of this, don't we, in a sort of flashback
element.
Yeah,
they're flying on like aerial turbo mules.
Aerial turbo mules. Not fluorescent choppers.
Nope.
Not regular turbo mules.
Nope.
Not equestroids.
No.
Aerial turbo mules. He's just firing indiscriminately at the bad guys, and he hits his own deputy.
Yes.
And he uses the phrase, cripples him.
He does say that. Oh.
Crippled him for life. Now that, right, so that's his backstory.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they thought it was one too far to kill the deputy, but he's disabled him for life. So that's by his recklessness. So that's why he's got this backstory that he does. Doesn't explain why he doesn't want bad guys put in jail, really, but whatever. He wants to keep out of things.
He just wants to keep away from everything. So he's come to a quiet planet to go quietly prospecting with his son.
Yes. The son knows nothing of this.
Nope.
Right? Which is important because of something the son says later on. Okay? But the son at this point is kidnapped.
Yes, he is.
He falls for the old stealing the turbo mules trick.
Yep, that's it.
So two-headed bird guy gets his little gang to steal their turbo mules. The kid runs after them, is kidnapped.
Yes.
In an attempt to get Lucas Conway.
Yeah. I want to talk briefly about what they bring out to guard the kid. Because they put the kid in a giant bird cage, which, irony, because his captor is a bird.
That is ironic.
Yep.
It's a bit Batman villain.
It is a bit Batman villain.
Where you're very on brand.
It is. And they say, to keep guard, we have, and they call it the robo-shooter.
Robo-shooter, yeah.
And what happens is, you know those old, like, 60s robot toys that are, like, one solid cast piece and on little wheels? And they come out and then the chest opens, they spin around. It looks like one of those, but it has a giant, open, gaping mouth.
Yep.
And I think, okay, first off, why does it have the mouth of an inflatable sex doll?
Very much a sex doll face.
It's a sex doll face on a robot.
Well, you know why. You've seen 30-30.
That's true. This is a very sexy show.
It's a sexy show for sexy people.
So, but they call it Robo Shooter. Fine, okay, it's not the most inventive name in the world, but I'll go with it. Then later on, when the marshal finally breaks into this room to rescue the kid, the Robo Shooter comes forward. Now, I would expect, and I had expected, this giant gaping open mouth to be what it would shoot from.
Absolutely.
That would make perfect sense.
Why else would it be there?
It shoots from its chest, Liz. Why does it have a blowjob face?
If you were questioning that character design before, when that comes out the chest, you go, but why?
Why
the face?
Why the face? The face is completely unnecessary.
Maybe he's just surprised. Maybe that it has been designed to just look surprised. So when you're shocked, right, it feels like that guy didn't mean to do it.
Oh, so you think it's like that's like a subtle dig at Lucas Conway. Like, you didn't mean to shoot your deputy. Now this thing's going to shoot you without meaning it. Oh, how does it feel, Lucas?
Well, I didn't mean they designed it specifically for him. But it's like you see this thing coming at you, right? And it looks surprised. And you're like, I wonder what it's so surprised about. That's weird, isn't it? It's obviously not a threat because it's surprised about something itself. And then it shoots you in the face.
Right. Okay, see, I hadn't considered that, but that is good. I like that.
Actually, it doesn't shoot you in the face, does it? Because it itself gets shot in the foot, yes. Which isn't a foot. It's like the tracks that it's moving on. But it gets shot in the base.
Mm-hmm.
I forget. Does Lucas Conway do that?
I think his... Yes, Lucas Conway shoots it in the foot.
Or does the kid take the gun and...
No, Lucas Conway shoots in the foot, it falls over, and then as it's spinning wildly on the floor, it shoots his son in his foot, and Lucas is like, ah, not again! It happened again!
Yeah, and it also shoots some debris, which lands on Lucas's leg. So just to recap, in a story about walking a mile in someone's shoes... We have a character who is regretful of a person who he has made permanently disabled. We then have a robot shot in the foot, the sun shot in the foot, and a man's legs crushed. So a proverb which could never apply to someone who is disabled because they cannot walk in someone else's shoes. They seem... determined to make everybody disabled so that no one can walk around in each other's shoes. Why has it taken this turn?
I think
there's like an irony that they're doing, but they don't know they're doing it.
I think maybe partway through the writing of this show, they went, hold on a minute, are people going to get confused? But like you said in the first episode, like this is written for kids, but it's like aiming so low the bar for kids.
Really low.
On this one where they're like, oh yeah, you know, you walk in their shoes. That doesn't mean putting on their shoes. Like, we need to reiterate that at no point is anyone else here going to put on someone else's shoes.
Because we're going to make them all unable to walk.
Yes. Make it so that no one can trade shoes. Right? Then it's very clear. That no one else is going to be walking in anyone else's moccasins. That it's entirely metaphorical.
Entirely a metaphor. Unbelievable.
Oh
so
my God.
All of this was to increase our like empathy for this character of Lucas Conway, because he, you know, he used guns and then it went wrong, so now he doesn't like guns or whatever else, right? And oh, he gave up his badge, so he's doing the right thing and he's trying to just live a quiet life. Except he's not doing the right thing. Because his son, once rescued, comes out with this little gem. I always thought shooting guns was all fun and games, but now I know guns can hurt you. All right, Lucas, if you're so concerned about gun safety, right, teach your kid. Start at home, mate. Don't have to give up your job. Tell your kid, hey, you know guns, they're dangerous. Would you believe? You can get hurt. Just start with that.
Well, that's it, because clearly at some point that kid's gone, Dad, can I talk to you about guns? I don't want to talk about guns.
Yeah.
That's it. And not stay away from guns is dangerous. I don't want to talk about guns at all. I mean, even Bravestar has to say to him, when he says that, he goes, guns can kill, Mark.
He says, hurt you? Guns can kill, Mark? He's just shocked. This kid's an adult, basically. He's like 14. He's like nearly an adult. He's like, oh, I'm so surprised. Guns can hurt you. You live in a Western. What do you think they were for?
You've been shot at multiple times this episode before you picked up a gun yourself. I mean, the whole dialogue for this scene is amazing, because before that, he goes, Bravestar goes to him, you've got a mighty brave father there. And he goes, I know that now.
Oh.
Like, oh.
And the worthy dialogue is unbelievable.
And if that's not bad, if it's when they're trying to invent their own sayings, they're escaping, like running down a spiral staircase with lava chasing them, and suddenly giant rocks start falling there, and Marshall Bravestar says, oh, we're caught between a rock and a hard ball.
Yes.
Because it's a circular boulder that's rolling after him.
I do love when people try to adapt a phrase, and it just ends up showing you how absurd the original phrase was.
Yes.
Love that.
Caught between
Love
a rock and a hard ball.
Although I have to say, when they get to the place and they're trying to locate Mark, which is the son's name, Bravestar does use ears of a wolf.
He does use ears of a wolf.
And I was relieved because he was really overusing that bear.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, bloody strength of, just say strength of a bear all the time. Like, you know, don't even have the other ones.
Just make it passive. Make them all passive.
Yeah.
Except for, like, speed of a Fuma, when he has to specifically call it. Everything else, just, he has these things. You don't need to have him shout it. Oh, my God.
The moral of this story wasn't that guns were bad.
It was don't litter. No, it obviously.
It was today we learned about walking a mile in someone else's shoes. And they say this, Brave Star and 3030 at the end. And 3030 goes, walk a mile in my horseshoes, you'd understand me better. And then they laugh their heads off as though that were the funniest thing anyone had ever said. That's not funny.
No, it's not.
There's no humour there. You've literally just reiterated the phrase. Honestly, I don't know what's funny about that. No. Is it the horses sometimes wear shoes?
I think it's that 3030 is so ornery. That
I think it is a sex joke.
You think it's a sex joke?
Because those two have sex.
as we've established.
Categorically, that is what happens in this show.
Well, look, you know,
if anyone watches this show and thinks that that isn't what it's about, they're wrong. They have not understood the show.
You know, you have a lot of long, lonely nights out on the range patrolling.
It's cold nights.
It's cold. Yeah, this is it. Cold nights on New Texas.
Yeah.
You know, you got to stick together for warmth, and you know, before you know it, one thing leads to another. That's what it is. That's the love that dare not speak its name between man and equestroid.
Exactly. Thank you. Exactly.
Amazing. Well, that is the end of the episode. That's the end of the two episodes we watched. Did you notice anything particular about the animation style in terms of quality?
I would have to say no.
Okay.
For the good reason that I don't really care, and I was a little bit half asleep through some of these episodes.
Well, Filmation, the studio that made it, had quite a reputation for bad animation work.
Again, what was the 20 million spent on?
This is the thing. I don't know. What they did, they used fewer frames per second than normal animators.
Okay.
Which makes things look quite jerky at times. They also repeated a lot of cells. So a lot of the time you will get characters who just kind of move on the spot or just the same things used again and again, and it's really noticeable. It was a long-running thing. The studio ran for many years. But in 1989, so 2 years after this, after Brave Star, they were sold to an investment group and the studio was shuttered. So that was the end of Filmation. But the amazing thing is that they were sold to L'Oreal.
L'Oreal?
L'Oreal, the cosmetics company, were fronting this investment group that bought Filmation. So L'Oreal owned like the rights to Brave Star.
I can't believe that they didn't employ that, because he's got a lovely head of hair.
Oh, he has. A lustrous mane, plus the mane on the horse.
But and the tail.
Yeah. Oh.
There's all sorts of tie-ins they could have done with that.
Yep.
I'm imagining a shampoo bottle with a Stetson on the top.
Like Matey.
Like Matey.
Like Matey, but classy.
Classy Matey. When you've grown out of Matey... Which actually, what am I saying? You don't grow out of matey. I was going to say you could move on to Brave Star, but who really grows out of a matey? If somebody gave me a matey right now, I'd be like, yes.
Yeah, to be honest, I feel the same way. I feel like every time I come back from the supermarket and I bought some Radox, I look at it and go, why didn't I buy a matey? It was right there.
It was right there.
Right there. I'm an adult now.
Look at me pretending to be an adult.
I can do these things that I want. I can have matey if I want. Well, there we are. Liz, that was Brave Star. How do you like me now?
I feel I've let myself down by sort of enjoying this one. I don't think it's necessarily better than other cartoons that you've shown me. It just feels like it's got more of my vibe. Do you know what I mean?
I do. I do know what you mean. Because, yeah, on the face of it, there are other cartoons that are objectively better, that are better drawn, better acted, better written, better voiced.
I've never cared about any of that stuff. And you know full well, I don't care about quality. I like is something that's a bit kitsch. And there's surely nothing more kitsch than a space cowboy.
That's it, 100%. I mean, the first thing I wrote down, because the first thing you get in those titles is like a branding iron with Brave Star that comes onto a map and it burns away. And I was like, this is Bonanza in space.
Bonanza in space, which 100% I would watch.
Who wouldn't? Everyone would watch Bonanza in space.
Will. a lot of people wouldn't. I need you to understand. I need you to understand the world isn't made up of people like you and me. Not everyone would watch.
Then I don't want to live on this planet anymore.
We'll move to New Texas.
That's right. Pard.
No, thank you.
There we are.
No, I genuinely quite enjoyed it. I think just because it is a little ridiculous, but I think Marshall Bravestar's quite a strong character. I quite enjoyed him. And 30-30, I'm definitely on board with, even though I have my issues. It's an entertaining watch.
Yeah.
Didn't mind this one. Did fall asleep, so doesn't say much for the plot. But, you know, the world they've created here has something a little bit different about it.
Well, and I think, to us, there's one more thing I want to mention before we go, which I think there's not many things that you've gone back and watched after we finished the show.
Nothing that you've ever recommended.
Nothing I've ever recommended you. That's true. I feel there's one thing on here that you might want to go and seek out.
Okay.
Now, there is a two-part episode quite late in the run of this. And I'm just going to give you the title.
Right.
Sherlock Holmes in the 23rd Century.
Nice. Oh, I love a Sherlock Holmes episode.
A two-part Sherlock Holmes episode as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's tempting.
Just leave that to whet your appetite.
It's tempting.
Yeah. There we go. I think that's the best I can hope for, is that you're slightly tempted to watch it.
I'm slightly tempted. And also, in my mind, I'm going, yeah, you won't watch that. But the fact that you almost got me there, that's closer than we've been before.
Well, that's good. In that case, I'm going to end there on a high. Liz, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll be back soon with another episode. Until then, if you enjoy this episode, please don't forget to rate, like, subscribe, send us a comment. We love hearing from you about the show. We'll be back soon. Until then, bye!